is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
We preach to the kids and to the parents before they even sign with us. It's not about the level that you go to. It's about the fit. It doesn't matter if you're playing Division One, Division Two, Three, NAIA, JUCO. It's about the fit and where you're going to maximize your playing career.
Pete Alexandru and Jason Franzen are the co-owners of Third Side Basketball. They coach together at Clearwater Academy International High School and post-grad. Over the past 10 years, Pete has served as both an assistant and head coach at the high school level in the Tampa, Florida area, winning multiple district and county conference titles. Pete has developed numerous players into all-county selections from three different high schools. In 2019, Pete accepted the position of head coach at Clearwater Academy International. In year one, the team earned a 21-7 record against one of the state's toughest schedules and helped get all five post-grad players a college scholarship after the season. Jason has been a high school coach for 24 years in the Tampa area, coaching under Randall Leith and David Thorpe. Jason took over a program that had lost 42 games in a row, had not made the state playoffs in 15 years, and had not won a state playoff game since 1967. In 4 years, the team accomplished all those and more, advancing to the state Sweet 16. Jason then left to work for a friend and Hall of Fame coach Tom Schoenfeld with Pete. Pete and Jason then left to help Clearwater Academy International start a basketball program, and through that, they fell into the post-grad level of basketball. Both Jason and Pete work with Coach David Thorpe, training high school, college, and pro players during the offseason. Hey, Hoopheads, anything is possible this March with our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Get a huge $2,000 trade-in discount on a new machine in March when you trade in any old Dr. Dish machine. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Tom Heil, head men's basketball coach at Baldwin Wallace University, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads mentorship program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Keep your notebook handy as you listen to this episode with Pete Alexandru and Jason Franzen from Clearwater Academy International and Third Side Basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinsing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are pleased to welcome from Clearwater International Academy, Jason Franzen and Pete Alexandru. Jason and Pete, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Thank you. Appreciate having us on.
Absolutely. Looking forward to this.
Excited to be able to dive into the world of post-grad basketball with you guys. Want to start out though by giving each of you a chance to tell us a little bit about your background, so that we can kind of work our way up to where you guys are today. So we're going to start with Jason. Just kind of give us a rundown. Go back as far as you want in your life where you think it's relevant to tell us a little bit about your basketball journey, and then we'll get Pete's side of that after.
Okay. I started, actually, it probably started when I was in high school. I went to a pretty good high school basketball-wise. I don't know if you guys remember Dimitri Hill. Yep. Played at University of Florida. So I played with him in high school. And one of my coaches was David Thorpe, who you guys had on your podcast, I believe.
Yes. Yeah, he came out with us. And we did some NBA stuff with him, and did a whole regular episode with him as well.
Yeah. So he was my JV coach. Great experience. He was phenomenal. Had a presence. You just knew he was a great coach, and I just fell in love with basketball. And then I really wasn't good enough to play in college. I had good grades, smart. I ended up going to University of Florida as a student. And during that time, I had no idea what I wanted to do, kind of majored in economics. And then I talked to Coach Thorpe, got back in touch with him, and he was training high school kids and pros. And I just kind of started helping him out after I finished. And then I hooked up with at Countryside High School. He introduced me to Randall Leith, who was another Florida Gator player a long time ago. And he was head coach at Countryside. And I became his JV coach and just launched from there. David was helping us out as an assistant coach. And then the offseason, David started bringing in pros. Udonis Haslam was coming in. Kevin Martin was in college at the time, and he was coming in the offseason, and just kind of started working with those guys, helping him out. And then at Countryside, still, we have a really good year, make state playoffs, all that stuff. And then Randall leaves, and I continue to coach. I'm helping Thorpe out, doing some training stuff. And then opportunity comes up where I can kind of take over a program locally. And they had lost 42 games in a row, something obscene. And I just kind of went in for the interview just to actually practice the interview process. And the principal just sold me on the job. It's a great guy, great principal. So I took it. He offered me the job. I took it. And I was there for 4 years. Four years. And my last year, won a ton of games and went to state playoffs and went to the Sweet 16 of the state playoffs. First time they have done that since 60-something, 67, I think. And they had a new principal halfway through the year. I didn't like him at all. So I resigned halfway through the year, effective at the end of the season. And then Coach Pete and I started talking because I coached him in high school. He'll talk about that. And he was coaching at another high school. And yeah. Well, I'm not sure what
to
say.
That could be good or bad. That could be good or bad. We're going to have to wait and see.
So he was coaching at another high school. He was having a successful run. And so one of our friends is a Hall of Fame coach at another local high school. And he's at the end of his career. He's like, hey, guys, come on, help me coach this last year. It's my last year here. Maybe we can hand the program down to Jason. And so we decided to do it. We both left where we're at. We go in, help him out. We have a great year. And Shaney Felt retires, and the principal decides to hire someone else. Which it was actually a blessing in disguise because we ended up at Clearwater Academy trying to start their high school program, and it kind of turned into like a half high school, half post-grad. And that's how we started learning about this whole post-grad deal. And we can kind of get into that. But yeah, it was crazy. Just a crazy story, crazy run. Coached a lot of great guys, a lot of Division I players. Coach Pete was one of them that I got a chance to coach, and coach a bunch more guys through Countryside and Clearwater and Dunedin, places I was at. And it's just been fun. I hate traveling, so college coaching never really interested me at all. I like to be home as much as possible. So this has just been perfect. So it's kind of it.
All right, Pete, go.
Yeah, absolutely. So grew up here in Clearwater, Florida area, played in a local high school. My freshman year, I remember actually prior to my freshman year, they were having 4 days a week, 6 a.m. workouts over the summer. And I'm an eighth grader going in like, what is going on here? We didn't even make the team. Like, what kind of like weird thing is this? I remember that. And but Randall Leith was there, like Jason's, like Franzen said. I call him Franzen a lot. And Franzen, you can just call me Pete because we just talk all the time. So if I say Franzen. But he was there and Coach Rope was there as well. But Franzen was a JV coach and I was an incoming freshman. And they kind of like really took me under the wings, like really early on, like focus on me, like held me accountable for stuff. I was known as like really just a shooter, you know, coming in. And then, you know, Franzen kind of said, you got to be a point guard. You'll be able to finish. And you sure as heck need to learn how to defend, because he made it very known that I played no defense. But he was right.
About summer league.
He was that's right. Yeah. I remember one time, a quick story, in the summer league, we're playing and our team is just no energy, no defense, not running back, nothing. And there was four straight possessions where Franzen was like, if you guys want to play defense, then you're not going to play offense either. So he would ask me to pass him the ball out of bounds to turn the ball over. And I had to do that four times in a row. So we just didn't have any offensive possessions, just play defense, because he's like, you guys got to wake up. So we had a really good JV team. After that, coach, all of them left. I was part of the all abandonment. Coach Franzen, Coach Thorpe, Coach Leith, all left. And a new coach came in. Talent wasn't really there and everything, but had a good career. 3 year starter on varsity. I got a scholarship to Florida College, an NAIA school in Tampa. Had a really good career there. I was a 3-time All American there. Really enjoyed it. My family's Greek, so I was all ready to go play in Greece. Unfortunately, the end of my junior year and then throughout my senior year, I had 3 knee surgeries on the same knee. And that kind of like derailed that. So I started coaching. You know, I graduated in 2011, started coaching in 2012, 2013 with an old a buddy of mine that I actually played against in college. He was a couple years older than me. And we took a team 1 year, you know, we had a bunch of juniors. And the next year we came back, kind of did a similar story to Franzen, except for his was way more impressive with the amount of time that the team has won. But we won the district title there. And then basically when he said he just missed one part, but when he went and helped out the Hall of Fame coach, I was with him there. We had a great team. And then we both went back to Countryside for about two and a half years. Yeah. And we helped a team win the first district title in school history.
I refer to those as lost years.
Yeah, the lost years. And after that, we kind of wanted to do our own thing. And that's where Franzen left off, basically the half post-grad, half high school independent team kind of got brought up to us. And here we are now.
So when you say got brought up to us, explain exactly what that looks like. You guys are doing your thing and all of a sudden this school, this opportunity that you guys probably didn't have a really good understanding at the time of what exactly it was or what opportunity it might be. What was the discussion that the two of you had before you decided to make that jump? I don't want to know who wants to take that question, but what was that discussion like?
I'll go first because it kind of like it went in stages, and Franzen, you can obviously jump on. But basically, we were like kind of like, you know, me and Franzen were like, we wanted a coach, but like, what do we do? We knew post-grad was a thing. You know, we were talking a little bit, but Coach Thorpe went and met with someone named Ben Patrick. He's knees over toes guy on Instagram. He's got like over 1.5 million followers. He was on Joe Rogan. And he does like crazy strength training with flexibility and stuff. But he wanted Coach Thorpe, and Coach Thorpe was looking for a gym to help train pros that came in, whatever. And they started talking, and they had some talented kids on the team from like all over, from like from Jersey, from California, and then a local kid. And you know, after spending a couple of weeks there, they were like, you know, Ben probably basically said like, I'm not a basketball coach. Like, I want to do this online training thing. Like, can you take over the program? Well, obviously the first person I called was Franzen. And I was like, look, it's an independent, it's like, almost, it's an academy, right? So, you know, we make our own schedule, we, you know, do our own thing, and let's see what we can do to try to, get these kids, local kids, like the best year they had. And we had a couple kids, Coach Rope's son being one, that chose to play for us over their high school because they wanted like a really good experience and Coach Rope trusted us. So we ended up getting, you know, five post-grad kids, five high school kids. We set a schedule. We played the best post-grad teams we could, nationally ranked some of them. We played IMG's nationally ranked high school team. And we were very successful. And like, Franz, you can kind of take over here. Halfway through the season, you kind of just looked at me and he said, I think we need to do all post-grad.
Yeah. So the high school part, the kind of what Pete left out is we had this group of kids and a couple of them were very talented, players. But Pete and I were like, where are we going to get the rest of the kids from? And Pete, how many kids go to CAI? 200 kids, maybe?
Oh, yeah, maybe. 250. So, right? There's like 80 in high school and 45 of them are on the football team.
So we had no idea. We're like, how are we going to – we can't have a team of just five kids. Like, we got to get more players. And I was still a teacher. I am a teacher at Clearwater and Clearwater High School. And I knew of a kid who graduated, had just graduated. And he was talented, wasn't going to go anywhere to play basketball. So I was like, hey, do you want to, you know, play over the summer with us? Do some AAU. He's like, yeah, that sounds great. Because we're going to do AAU and stuff over the summer. Just try to help the kid out, give him some exposure. And then he talked to some other kids. And we got, five post-grad. We're like, let's just make a – we have no rules that's abiding us. We're not part of the high school athletic association in Florida. So let's just do whatever. So we had like this half post-grad, half high school team. And like Pete said, we played some really good high school teams, only good high school teams. And then we played a post-grad schedule. And I'll be honest with you, I did not like it at all at first. It's like you're playing in, you know, you're playing in rec centers. There's no crowds. There's just no juice to the games. But then as we got into the season, I mean, the coaches are good. You're coaching against, you know, guys that are, you know, Division I, Division II level players. And, it was just fun, just real fun. We can kind of do our own thing. There was no politics involved above us, because really, the administration let us do our own thing. And right now we decided to do this post-grad and we're part of the school, but we're separate, if that makes sense. So he's not going to fire us for losing games or whatever. Not that we are, but we run it strictly. We kind of do our own thing and it's been great. It's been great.
All right, so let's go to this question. Pete, maybe you can answer this. So what's the difference between, for somebody who's in our audience who maybe isn't familiar or that familiar with post-grad basketball, what's the difference between post-grad basketball and high school basketball? Obviously, one difference is the players have already graduated from high school, but give us a breakdown of just what's different between high school basketball and post-grad basketball.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you said the main difference, obviously, they've all graduated, but like, it really stems down to, you know, what kind of program you go to. So I can speak for like ourselves. When you're in high school, you're a student, you're taking academics, you know, all that kind of stuff. You're still kind of quote unquote a kid. When you get to post-grad, when you come with us, you're making a time and money investment. And so is the family. So Coach Francis says this all the time, you know, you got to treat it like a job. Now, some of our kids have regular jobs part-time to make some money because they're local. Some of them take online classes at local community colleges here to just kind of get ahead and help their, you know, basically their resume for college coaches look a little bit better. But with that, I mean, like we go 2-3 times a day. It's a very long season. We start like July and we finish playing at the end of February, beginning of March. There's strength and conditioning. There's flexibility focus. We do cognitive training with our good friend Tuck Taylor, who ran a Neuro Beast. He's all in the hand-eye coordination, the mental fatigue, basically, of the game to try to improve your mental toughness of the game. He's really into that. They get that. They get individual work, skill work, along with team practices. And with that, I mean, it's also, you know, in high school, you play 24, 25 games. Here, I mean, we can play as many as we want. We can play 50, 60 if we want. We usually play between 35 and 40, you know, 40-minute games, shot clock. The rules are different. The rules are different as far as, you know, 5-second rule and when you can call a timeout and stuff like that. So you have to adjust. And the kids were playing, you know, some of them are, you know, JUCO, you know, they didn't work out at JUCO and they're, you know, they're trying to do one more year at post-grad. So some of these kids are like 21 years old. That's the age limit here at the league that we're in and that we play in. So you're looking at like a 3-4 year difference. So you're playing, even if you might be more talented than the other person, they're, you know, they're 3 years more mature, you know, they're stronger and faster usually. But it's also our whole purpose is to get the kids in college. So yes, winning games comes along by doing that. And, you know, we've done plenty of that, but we build the skill or enhance their skill. We build their basketball IQ with the way that we run our drills. And they're lucky, and, you know, Coach Franzen and myself have both been in the gym with Coach Storp doing NBA workouts and seeing them. So the stuff that we're giving the kids is high level training. The basketball IQ with the way that we play offense and defense. And the biggest thing is this just maximum exposure, which is unreal reach out that we have to do as far as well as, you know, they get the highlight videos, the photos, and, you know, the whole marketing side of it. So it's really, I mean, yes, teams play for state titles or national titles or whatever it is. But when you're in high school, you're playing to win a district title or a state title or a conference title. When you come to us, like, we want to get everyone better so we all look good and we all get film that coaches want to see, and then they want you to come to their school. That's our sole purpose.
All right. So there's a couple things that jump out from what you just said. One is when you're thinking about the schedule, and for people, again, who maybe aren't that familiar with post-grad basketball, who are you playing on that schedule? How far do you have to travel in order to be able to play the games? Where do you find opponents, I guess, is my main question.
So, yeah. So we're in a league with local opponents in our area. And that league also has opponents throughout the whole state that we pick games with. And then the rest of it is just contacting schools. Like, we played IMG, which is, you know, ranked, you know, top whatever every single year. We played them every year. And luckily for us, Florida has very good post-grad and is very – there's a lot of post-grads as well. We don't have to travel far. We can go to Orlando, which is 2 hours away, you know, more northern Florida, which is 3-4 hours away. But – we attend also like jamborees and showcases where a bunch of colleges are going to be in. So if you're going to be seen, you can be seen at those events. But the majority of our stuff is done through email and the video we play. So we play just post-grad teams in our league and then other post-grads throughout the state. Like, they're all over the place from Miami to the Panhandle. So we're lucky in the sense that we don't really even have to go out of the state to get noticed or to know that we're playing good competition.
Before you guys got involved in this, how aware of it were you, and how much, when has it become big on the scene? Like, if we were to go back in the state of Florida 10 years ago, how big or small is post-grad basketball compared to where it is today?
Honestly, no clue. I knew it was somewhat of a thing. One of our friends, Aaron Holmes, runs Pete's, he's really good friends with them. They're in the same graduating class for the most part. He started doing post-grad a few years ago, and I've, you know, I heard him talk about it, seen some tweets about it. I just never thought it was like a, you know, it's not really a thing. Until we, you know, until our year that we had this half high school, half post-grad team, and we started learning about it. You know, I think Coach Pete did a great job of talking to other coaches, in between, like when we play these tournaments in between games, you know, coach is going to talk to these other coaches about, you know, what they're doing, how they run their program. And, we kind of took all this information in and said, well, heck, like when we were in high school coaches, one thing that we constantly were complaining about was all the talent we saw. And high school coach is really not helping these kids out a lot, as far as sending out film and getting them exposure. And, you know, so if these kids weren't in the right AAU program, then no one knew about them. So we're going through the season, and I was like, Pete, like, let's just do this. Like, we've always talked about trying to get more kids exposure, and this post-grad thing is definitely a way to do it. And we also get to run it by our own terms. You know, just as far as what we schedule, games, practices, you know, funds and how we raise money and what we use it for. Like, we're the ones governing it. And it was awesome. It's a lot of work, you know, with the exposure part, you know, cause I mean, I was on the phone with a coach right before, you know, you guys sent me the email for the link to get on the podcast. A coach called me. So it's constantly texting and emails and phone calls. It's now starting to pick up again since team seasons are ending, and we have about five players we're still trying to place. So it's definitely a lot of work. I mean, Pete can probably answer this, but between him and I, we've probably sent out 5,000 emails already.
No, it's more than that.
It's ridiculous to count how many emails we send out. And we do it. It's not like, you know, if we feel a kid is an NAI level kid and he doesn't care where he plays, he's like, coach, I'll go anywhere to play. Coach Pete and I will literally send his bio and highlight clips to every coach in every program in the entire country. Not
like
once. Legit,
like literally, we have a database. Sorry, Francis. Yeah. We have a database with every single coach for every team from D1, D2, D3, NAI, JUCO, USCAA, NCCAA, which are other conferences. We have a database of everyone.
And these are individualized emails. So, you know, coaches, if you just sent them this mass email, it's going to their spam. You know, so we individualize every single email. It's like, hey, coach so-and-so, and here's our guy. And then we give him the bio. And then it's not once, it's not twice. It could be three and four times that we do this whole process until a coach finally says, hey, I didn't see that kid. And sometimes we'll get a phone call like, hey, I just saw, you know, your kid. And this is the fourth time we've emailed this school.
Right. Yeah.
So it's a lot of work. I think we're doing way more work than other postgrads because I've heard about what some of these other postgrads do, but we've done a great job. I think Pete said it yesterday. I think we have like a 96% placement rate, into college, and what we mean by that is not only placing them, but also our motto, our what we try to live by is we understand that guys are going to have to pay. Like when you're playing at a Division III, Division II, sometimes NAIA school, they're only offering you partial scholarships. We try to get it down to a point where if a kid is going to go just be a student at a state school in Florida, and we try to get it at that point or below. If it's beyond that point, then we're not going to send a kid to a school where he has to pay, you know, 20 grand a year just so he can play basketball. We're not doing that.
And just to piggyback on that, because I do know the numbers on that. So far out of we have 21 in the last 2.5 years, 21 kids placed or whatever. The most someone is paying is 4,000. And
wow, that's awesome.
That school, that's awesome. And that school that he went to is 45,000 to go to. So that's been well, that's what we try to pride ourselves on, you know, affordable education. If you're going to use basketball as a way to go get an education, this is where you want to be.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes a ton of sense. I know that when you think about, I have a daughter who's a senior. She's not a basketball player at this point in her life, but man, you start going through that college application process and looking at the sticker price of some of these private schools, and you're talking about Division III basketball. Those schools, man, those bills add up really fast. And if you can find a way, whether it's from a, you know, the combination of academics and athletics, and there's opportunities out there. I don't think people realize that what you just described, where you could be at a school that costs $40,000 and if you're a good basketball player, and most often if you're a good student, you can oftentimes get that sticker price way, way down because the coach wants you to be a part of their program. And I think sometimes people forget or maybe don't even realize that it's not just at those higher levels where you can get, again, it's not called an athletic scholarship, but because you're an athlete, because you're a basketball player, you have more opportunities. I don't think a lot of parents and players always, I don't think they always realize that.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right, because not only that, I mean, it's a big thing. Like if you have a 3.25 and you did good on your SAT and you're going to a D2 NAI school, they can use academic money to layer on top of athletic money. And then all of a sudden you have a free ride.
Right.
And that's one of the biggest things like we talk about like weekly. We're lucky that we get to select kids, and we've had an amazing group of kids since we started this. But when we get these kids that are like 2.3, 2.4, 2.5, and then never took the SAT or took it once and did really, like, we just like cringe, because like if they just, you know, were got, you know, it's not always the high school coach's fault or whatever. It's a totally different, you know, their mindset's completely different. You know, they have to report to a principal. They have to win the team. You know, the school wants to win championships or whatnot. But if anyone is listening, parents, players, whatever, if your GPA is above that 3.0 and you have a good SAT, your sticker price already drops.
Yeah, it really is. And like I said, I think people don't oftentimes realize that. And it's something that I wish we could get out there to more people. And you guys know that there's amongst players, especially families, with the way AAU and with the way social media is today, there's such a Division I is the only thing that kids are thinking about. And look, I used to be a basketball player. So way back in the day, I was the same. Like I wanted to be a Division I player. I ended up getting one Division I scholarship offer, and guess where I ended up going to school? The place where I got that one Division I scholarship offer. But I think you look at it today, and there's so much out there social media wise. And if you're a kid, you got to read probably 20 times a day. This kid, I'm committed here, and I'm signing there, and this and that. And you got to watch. And it's just, I can't even imagine growing up and being under that kind of pressure. And so you can see where, from the social media side of it, from the AAU side of it, from the family pressure side of it, that kids can get locked into, hey, there's only one path for me to get to go to school and get a scholarship and be able to have my college paid for. And I think you guys are doing a great thing by trying to educate people and help your kids to be able to understand that, look, there's more than one way to utilize the game of basketball, utilize your talents, utilize your academics in order to get an opportunity. And I think that's something that, as you guys continue to do that, man, you're making such an impact on kids' lives. And obviously it's going to pay off as you're there longer and you start to see the fruits of those labor, where you've been there 5 or 10 years. Now all of a sudden you got guys coming back that have success, and whether it's as continue to have success as basketball players, just as they transition into quote unquote real life.
Well, two things that, you know, I wanted to add in. You know, me personally, I wish I could talk to every single freshman high school basketball player in the country and tell them that, you know, 3.0 or higher and strive to get 1,000 on your SAT. But that 3.0 is huge, because if you ruin that, you know, if you know, you're an immature freshman, you bomb your grades, but then your next 3 years you get better, it's hard to get above that 3.0 threshold. You know, so when we get guys come to us at post-grad and like Pete said, they have a 2.6, it's so tough. I mean, the options drop, especially if a kid is maybe talented to play, you know, Division III basketball and have a good career, but he has a 2.6. You know, it's hard to find that Division III school where I can get it down to a point where it's financially worth it to go to school there. It is very, very hard. Right now, I'm starting to do a database of Division III schools that are, you know, 25 grand and less, to put that in my pocket. So, you know, I know that these are the only schools I can target for this type of particular player. You know, cause the debt is the big thing. Don't want kids going to debt. you know, graduating just to play basketball. And then the other thing with that is what you kind of touched on is we preach to the kids and to the parents before they even sign with us. It's not about the level that you go to. It's about the fit, you know, so it doesn't matter if you're playing Division One, Division Two, Three, NAIA, JUCO. It's about the fit. And we're going to maximize, you know, your playing career because most of our guys are going to play 4 years in college, maybe five with the redshirt year, and that's it. And so you want to play. You don't want to go to a, you know, if you know, you go to a Division One school and sit for 2 or 3 years, and then maybe you play your senior year. You know, I want a kid to have a great fit. And so we kind of focus in on that, like the fit's the most important thing. And our kids and the families really buy into that. So they're not locked into just Division One. So it's a good thing you brought that up.
That makes sense. So how have you guys gone about building relationships with college coaches? Because obviously you have your database, you're sending out emails, but the more you're in this, the more you get to know coaches personally, where you can pick up the phone and call them, say, hey, I got a kid for you, or hey, this kid I think would be a great fit. What's that process been like for you guys as you've transitioned from being high school coaches into this post-grad world?
Pete?
I think it's the same for, I mean, me personally, I love to talk anyways. So like, and Franzen knows that, like between the two of us, I'm the talker for sure. I mean, Franzen knows how to, you know, talk to, you know, I just kind of just go free willy. But it really all started if with our first group, that half and half. You know, we had, you know, a kid that wasn't even qualified. You know, we went all the way up to having six letters of recommendation, you know, helping him a little bit with his essay.
Essay.
And then, talking to the assistant dean of the school to vouch for this kid. And now
I'm going to butt in real quick, Pete. This kid is a Division One level player. Like, Division One level player. We couldn't – that's a whole other thing we can talk about is just coaches and their evaluation process. But Division One level player, we got him a bunch of, you know, Division Two interest. But he had these low grades. He had no interest coming out of high school. I mean, he wasn't even gonna go to college, I don't think. So Pete, you can kind of keep going with that. Sorry about that.
Yeah. So like, I mean, and he played like the five in high school, and you know, we came in, you're like, you know, Coach Thorpe was there that day, and Franzen, and we were like, he's got to be a guard. He bought on fully. Long story short, he is now in. He was a second team All conference in his conference at the Division II school that he's at, and he was the only underclassman to get those honors, and he's holding about a 3.0 grade point average. So that first year team, him and along with the other five, six guys, really like kind of, you know, gave us credibility. And that first year we had like 40 coaches in the gym just in 1 month, and they were really liking our workout. You know, they would tell us, you know, we never really stay for a full practice, or we love the way your kids are competing and love what you're doing. You know, a couple of them said, you know, I'm going to steal that drill, you know, and it's great. So they started seeing us as like, okay, you know, this is kind of like a program that maybe, you know, we'll get players that we're interested in. And through all the emails, you know, they call us, we immediately save every number. If someone is having a good game, we immediately text. We'll be in the hotel rooms overnight. Hey, you text this group, I text for this person. And we're just blowing up these coaches. I mean, nonstop. And we've gotten to the point now where enough of our kids have been recruited or, you know, gone to school, or they've seen us play, you know, been to practices, been to games, whatever you have you, that they're starting to now, you know, give us an email or a text or a call in the beginning of our year to say, hey, what kind of guys you have this year? Should I be looking for anyone?
Go ahead.
So like that really flipped a lot of the things. Like, even though like the amount of emails and outreach that we do, that these coaches, and we do the same thing, like if they respond, even if it's like, you know, looks great, but you know, already filled that spot for this year, keep in mind they'll remember our communication. They'll remember seeing the highlights of the kids, you know, whatever. They'll come back around to us and they're more likely.
It's vice versa too, because when we get coaches that respond, we put them on a priority because a lot of coaches either don't respond at all or never respond. And so we understand that too. So it kind of works both ways with when it comes to that though, Pete.
Yeah, no, and that's really what it's done. So being able to, you know, them see us in person, them talk to us on the phone, just talk basketball, kind of tell them what we do and what we think of the players. And, you know, they like the kind of culture that we kind of build, you know, focusing on their IQ and stuff like that.
And being honest with them.
It's just really, yeah, we're completely honest with them. And just being transparent with them. And that's really how it's sparked. And it's, you know, and we anticipate it to continue to grow.
Hey, college basketball fans, join the action during March Madness with DraftKings Sportsbook. Turn your team's victories into your own big win. New customers can bet $5 on any team to win and get $200 in free bets if they do. It's that simple. If they win, you win. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, you can still join the college hoops action with DraftKings Pools. Everyone can play free pools all March long for a shot at a share of over $250,000 in prizes. Simply join a pool and answer questions like, who will make it to the next round and who will hit the most three-pointers? Then track your results. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code HOOPHEADS, bet $5 on any college hoops team to win, and get $200 in free bets if they do. If they win, you win with promo code HOOPHEADS this week at DraftKings Sportsbook. 21 and over. Restrictions apply. See show notes for details.
So once you have a kid that you sort of identify as part of your program and you know, okay, we think this kid is at this level. So you start reaching out via email to those coaches that you have in your database. You probably reach out via phone to coaches you have maybe a more personal connection with. Talk a little bit about how you use highlights and social media to help your kids get even more exposure.
Francis, you can go.
Okay. So first thing is Coach Pete and I, we have, you know, the kids we signed, we've kind of evaluated, you know, throughout our preseason process, and we kind of get an idea, okay, this kid is division, maybe low major division one, division two, this kid is division two. This kid's NAIA. That's kind of where that's our baseline. Now the other thing is, like, we can make highlights and that's great. So we play a few games, we can get some highlights, but what we need is full games. Because the first thing a coach will ask is, coach, highlights look great. He's what we're looking for. Can you send me a couple full games? Well, if I don't have a full game of a guy, we don't even start the email process.
Right.
You know, because I can't say, hey, coach, you know, we're halfway through our season. I don't have a full game I can really send you. So we just wait. We just hold off. And we're not talking about full games where a kid comes out and he's, you know, he scores 30 points. You know, I'm talking about a game where he scores a little bit, but he's efficient scoring the basketball. He's scoring in the spots that we've discussed and talked about within the flow of our offense. He's rebounding. He's playing defense. He's being a great teammate on video. We preach to the kids, hey, look, you can have a great game, but if you're barking at your teammates, you're talking back to refs, you're sitting on the bench and your body language is terrible, I can't sell this film. I can't send this film out. It's going to kill you if I do that. It's everything, you know, all the pieces have to fit for us to send out film, because our camera catches everything. and we're not editing things out of the video. So that's the biggest thing. So it's finding that film, you know, getting a game, getting two games. And once we get a game or two, then it's on. Then it's every coach in our level that we feel that player is at. And if we're getting a lot of interest at that level, Pete and I were like, well, let's move up a level. And then we'll start going there too. So that starts the process. And what makes it tough is if we get a kid, a player, this season we had a couple of players that didn't really get filmed to the end of the season. And it was a struggle. You know, we're playing guys that maybe we shouldn't have played. But we're trying to get film. And that's kind of where we're at this year. This is the first year that we had to do that. Because we're trying, you got to get full games. You got to get full games. And when I say full games, it's not just, like I said, shooting, you know, getting a bunch of points. Cause I never, when I talk to a college coach, and Pete will tell you this too, they never ask how many points is, you know, what is the average? That's not the question they ask. They ask, does he play defense? Does he rebound? Is he efficient scoring the basketball?
Do you share that with parents?
Yes.
Yeah, you share that advice with parents? Because I can go and sit in the stands at any high school game, and the only thing any parent cares about is how many points did my kid score. That's the only thing they care about.
Well, we struggle with that early. You know, we get in our kid, you know, we talk to the parents in our initial interview, signing the kids up. And then what happens is we have kids, we play a first couple games, and, you know, our point guard this year, one of our point guards this year, I love him to death. He was not happy. He looked, you know, he was down, and come to find out, he had a bunch of people in his ear telling him, you got to score points. You got to get buckets. You got to score points. So finally he bought in to just, I'm telling him, you got to learn how to run a team. If you run our team and play darn good defense, that's money. That's free money for you, man. And he bought in. He stopped listening to the people in his ear. It's not about getting buckets. It's not about scoring points, getting buckets. That's great. But usually when we get coaches that are interested in a guy, they kind of know that he can score, or he can shoot. You know, they want to see how efficient they are. You know, do they value the basketball? Are they making quick decisions on the catch? You know, are they playing defense? I mean, we had a kid last year or 2 years ago in our, he was 6'8", shot 46% from three. And we're not talking like 1 3 a game. We're talking about 3 or 5 a game. And, just a very good player.
Freak athlete.
Very good athlete. And we send film out. We're getting a bunch of interest, and coaches are telling us, coach, you know, he's 6'8", he's not rebounding. We're like, yep. We've been telling him that.
Right, exactly.
He's not running, why is he running the floor? We've been telling him that too.
No news to us, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, so that's what we talk about all the time. Like, we got to put full games together. And kids buy in. We've been lucky. The three post-grad teams we've had, they've really bought in to what we're trying to tell them. Cause I think we know the process well enough. Even in high school, you know, cause we would talk about some of the better players that were trying to get recruited, about, you know, being a great teammate, having that on film, you know, cause coaches, if a coach comes to see you, you know, if he travels, we had a point guard at Countryside. He was a Division I level point guard. We had, you know, UCF was coming down to see him, Dayton, Wisconsin, Iowa. So they're on our gym. I'm like, you got to be a great teammate. You got to just be, you know, great on the bench, great to the refs, great to the coaches. They know you can play. That's why they're here. They just want to see all these other things about you. So we kind of sell that to all our other kids in this post-grad level. So it's tough. But it's worked out for the 3 years so far.
What's the ideal roster size for you guys? So you're obviously trying to balance. Look, if you got to get game film on player 12 or 13 on your roster, that can clearly be a challenge. So when you guys look at where you are right now in the moment and maybe where you want to take the program as you look forward, what's the ideal roster size to be able to help each one of the players to meet the goal that they have and that you have for them to be able to play college basketball at whatever level fits them?
Pete? Yeah, I'll start and you can jump in, Franzen. Basically, right now, the last 3 years, our ideal roster size has been around 12. Coach and I are like co-head coaches. So like, you know, sometimes I stand, sometimes he stands, like it is what it is. You know, sometimes we both stand, it's post-grad, you know, the rules are different in games, but he does an amazing job of balancing minutes. So a lot of these kids are coming as, you know, quote unquote, the guys from their high school that are used to playing 30 out of 32 minutes. Well, we make it very well known very early that the, one, it's not healthy for you, right? Keeping them healthy is like the number one thing. It's such a long year. There's so much going on, wear and tear, all that kind of stuff. But everyone's here to try to get to the next level. So, you know, our first nine averaged between 19 and 23 minutes a game. So we were able to balance that. And, you know, and the, you know, the last three or so on the bench, they had games where they even started. You know, they were down at like 14, 15 minutes. So everyone is playing. So right now, you know, that's where we've been at. What we hope to continue and what is kind of unfolding here slowly for us is, you know, we're kind of like a, you know, blue collar, small gym, local players. You know, last year we walked into IMG National. They hadn't lost a game in like 30 games. They had four starters were in the top 30 of the class or top 40. And we come in, a bunch of kids from, you know, the Bay Area here, you know, we roll up and with, you know, 12 minutes left, you know, in the game, we're up by two. Like we're competing with players that will be in the NBA draft that are in March Madness right now. And, so like, you know, small gym, you know, the kids usually live at home and all that kind of stuff. So we're kind of special in that way. But, you know, as things go, so 12 to 14 is like the max. And, you know, everyone gets the same. Everyone gets a bio. Everyone gets highlights. You know, obviously you have to play well to get the highlights. You have to play well to get the game film. But everyone has the same chance. And as we grow, and then I'll let Franzen talk about it, is, you know, we're close to getting, you know, a much bigger facility. We're close to getting housing, stuff like that. We could do two teams because we have enough coaches in this area or people that want to coach and can buy into like what we do, that we'll have multiple coaches. So there's not just two of us doing this. There's, you know, six of us doing this. Then you could have two teams of like 12 to 14 that you could really focus on. You know, not everyone's going to get there. It's just the nature of the business. But there's some that have, you know, 20, 30, 40 kids on their team. And I just wouldn't know what to do. You know, like last year we sent seven to college and we had nine on our team. One got hurt and couldn't play. And the other one just kind of decided he wanted to just go to school. There's a post grad that has like 40 kids on their team and they sent seven kids to college. So we want to be realistic here. We will not just take anyone because they're paying or they want to do this. Like we want to make sure that like we strongly feel that we can get you interest and get you something that will be, that will make sense for you and your family. And Franzen, you can add on to that.
No, I mean, yeah, that's a tough thing. The minutes, minutes is tough. You know, guys have to learn how to buy in. We've been very fortunate. We've had a lot of great guys in our program. You know, the 2 years ago, Pete's talking about when we played IMG, you know, our starting point guard was a forward in high school, and he came into our gym and I'm looking at Pete. I'm like, you know, this kid's 6'5". He's going to be our starting point guard. And he was a Division I level player, but he fell in love with Saginaw Valley State, a Division II school, had a very good year this year. It was his first year up there. And he bought into our system. And when he committed to Saginaw Valley, you know, him and I talked about, you know, lowering his minutes a little bit. He's like, no, coach. He goes, yeah, absolutely. I want to play, but I want to get other guys scholarships now. Like, that's my goal. My goal is get other guys, you know, I want to make other guys better to help them get scholarships. I remember one game he opted to, you know, we didn't start him and then we sat him. I think he played maybe 3 minutes. Because other guys were having good games, or, you know, other guys were having a good game. And, you know, we obviously could have won the game pretty easily if he played. We ended up losing by a couple, but we got really great film for three other guys. So we get guys really to buy into what we're selling. Minutes are a big thing for me, because I don't want to get guys hurt. This is I mean, we literally are last chance you. You know, we can, you know, the Netflix show. We literally are it for these basketball kids. Because if they don't get anything after this year, that's it. You know, the gap year's over, clock starts officially. And so, you know, their parents probably don't want to make another investment into doing another post-grad year. So, so this is it. And so, you know, guys, we've been fortunate to get the right group of guys to buy into what we're trying to do. So,
all right. So we've talked about the back end of kids are in the program. They go through the year. You guys are helping them to get to schools. Let's go back to the front end. How do you guys identify the players that you think might be a good fit to bring into your program? What does that scouting recruiting process look like as you think about who's coming in rather than what you're doing for the guys that are going out?
Well, so you can go ahead. Can I start this and then you can take over? I don't want to say anything bad about anybody. I think it's very easy for us here because the Tampa Bay area is so under-recruited, not just nationally, but also by local schools. Our local Division I school, who doesn't even contact us, and quite a few Division II schools that don't even look at our players. Or guys in the area, not just our players, but just guys in the area in general. So the whole area, I feel, is just under-recruited, which is good for us. So there's a lot to choose from. And with Pete and I, it's only been the two of us. So we haven't had a chance to really go out to a bunch of high school games. We see film. We see social media. You know, I'll read clippings and some of the writings on some of the local websites about games. And then we just kind of start making a list throughout the year. And then when the year's over, we start having open gyms and bringing those guys in and then Zoom calls and talking to players. But we've been very fortunate because we've had such a big group of guys that are just no one knows about. Pete?
Yeah. Yeah. So there's two ways. The one way is obviously how we've been able to, you know, social media, Twitter, you know, former players referring kids to us, former parents referring kids to us. I mean, our inbox right now on Twitter, you know, we got to clear it up, but it's probably got like 40, it's probably got like 40 to 50 unread messages from kids reaching out to us. So it's happening all over. But if we find someone and we think that they're a fit, like we think, okay, we can get them to somewhere. We start having open gyms and just kind of letting them play at first, getting a kind of vibe, see how they, you know, are they going to defend or are they going to just pound the ball, you know, all those things.
And how then they interact with the other kids.
Correct.
That's a big thing.
You know, you got to get along with everyone. And then we have more like skill style workouts where like half of it will be skill then play. So we do as much evaluating in person, trying to get to know these kids as possible. If we feel comfortable, we will then set up a Zoom call with their family. We just kind of go over everything we offer for our program and what we think we could do to them, you know, answer any questions that they have, and then, you know, send over, you know, the contract. And then they get back to us and say, you know, I signed the contract. I want to spend my gap year with you. And that's it, you know, and then we kind of go through it. You know, the first year last year, and I remember Franzen saying, it's going to be fine. I'm like, dude, we're like in like June, like we got to go. It took us less than a month and a half and we got 11 kids all from this area. And, so like Coach said, we're very lucky to have, it's under recruited. And there's just a lot of talent there's a lot of schools and there's a lot of players that have a lot of skill, but you know, might need that extra exposure. You know, that's really like the key. It's our ability to contact and the work to contact coaches from all over. We have kids in Maine, Michigan, Louisiana, Alabama, South Carolina. One's going to Montana, Boston, Illinois. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, so Pete, can I step in before I forget? It's also about seeing players that play a position in high school. There's no way they're going to play that position in college. So, you know, for example, our point guard 2 years ago, he was playing forward. as a 6'5 kid. Now he played in a very successful high school program. It went to the state final four years in a row. He was a starter on each one of those teams, freshman to senior. He played with Kevin Knox, who's in the NBA now. You know, but he had nothing, no exposure, nothing, because he was a forward. This kid was a point guard. He's super high IQ, can read the game very well. Just needed to work on ball handling and having the confidence to do it. And then we had another kid a couple years ago who was strictly a post player. Just coach put him in the post. He was the biggest kid on their team. He was a wing. You know, he's going to be a wing in college. So we turned him into a wing, and he's playing at a very good Division II school now. So it's also about that too. You know, finding those guys that are essentially out of position for college because they had to help their high school team to play a certain position. So it's really not that hard finding players, luckily. The only thing that we're dealing with now is with post-grad becoming more popular, there's a bunch popping up now. And the one thing that I tell our guys to focus on, like even if they're not going to sign with us, you know, just watch it, because some of them are money grabs. You know, we had 5 post-grad teams in the area, you know, close up halfway through the season. They are shut down. And so we had guys calling us asking if they can play on our team. And we just, you know, we can't, you know, we can't do that, you know? So, you know, it's tough. But there is plenty of players, and that's a good thing.
What does the conversation look like? Not just with the player, but obviously a big part of this is talking to families, right? You got to talk to parents and make sure parents understand what they're getting into, because I'm sure, just like a lot of us out there, there's parents of these players are like, post-grad, I don't even know what that is. So yep. You probably have to educate families on what it is and then why a post-grad year is good in and of itself. And then not only that, but now, as you said, there's all these other programs that you're having to compete against, you're having to sell yourself against. So just talk a little bit about what those conversations are like with families as you get into the process where you've identified a kid or a kid's come to you and you're like, yeah, this kid would be a good fit, but then you kind of have to close the deal and educate the parents. So just talk a little bit about what that process looks like.
Yeah, Franzen, I got this locked in real quick, if you don't mind.
Yep.
We've had a million of these conversations. So first things first, then this is for everyone, parents, coaches, kids, players. Post-grad is not an opportunity for them to make up 8 to 10 classes that they messed up in high school to get their grades up. That's a big misconception. They think they can just get their grades up. You can only basically retake one class unless you're labeled ESE, where you can take up to 3 classes. That's it. And for most, unless you're at a 2.989, it's not going to move your GPA to a place you want, that you need. So that's the first thing. So we tell them that right off. And that's why we encourage, and we have a rule, if you have under a 3.0, you have to be a half-time student, take 2 classes each semester in college, because that helps you. But with the parents and with the kids, but the parents especially, it's, look, this is what we do. This is what we've done. This is how we like to do things, right? We give them a whole layout of how we do things. And at the end of the day, it's an investment. Are you paying whatever the money is to come to us? And we are by far the least expensive. I mean, we got programs, you know, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year to go to, which we're not even like in the same conversation. But any type of money, especially in this time, is still an investment, right? Even if it's $2,000 is $2,000 that they're not going to get back. So we want them to first trust us. So we build a relationship with both of them, the parents and the kids. But it's about, okay, but now your son is going to college for free, and the tuition at that college is $50,000. So your $2,000 investment on us just saved you $250,000 on a college education. Like, that is what it always comes down to.
Our program isn't $2,000. That's just, you know, if there's a need-based situation. Yeah.
That was just a number.
Right. Yeah. Understood.
But
So that's what it's all about. It's they want to continue their passion. They might have been hurt. They need to get their SATs up. They just need to get a little bit better, get more exposure. Okay, here's what we know we're going to do. If your son buys in, you know, there's a very good chance that, you know, he can get somewhere. And that this time and money and all this time, you know, this gap year is important. Plus, you don't lose a year of eligibility.
Pete, this is a free year.
Yes.
Pete, can I add, you know, another conversation that we have to add to parents, especially after our first year doing this, is not only you're going to make an investment for the post-grad year, so you're going to make a financial investment in some capacity, but also you have to have an honest conversation between the parent and the kid, the player, to see if this is really what he wants to do. Because, you know, we've had in our first year, we had a guy that, you know, or even last year, that went away to college. And then, you know, after a semester or after a year, they're like, yeah, I don't want to play basketball anymore. I just want to be a student. You know, so how serious are you? Because, you know, don't just do this just to play a post-grad year. Don't just do this because you want to think you're, you know, being a college athlete. I mean, we talk about it being a job on post-grad. It's even more of a job when you're an athlete. I mean, you know, Mike, you know that.
For sure, man.
It's you're not a normal student. You know, there's a lot less partying going on. There's a lot less social scene going on. You know, it's a tough, tough situation, especially if you're playing at a school where there's not as much fanfare maybe. And so we really try to tell the parents, like, you know, don't just invest for this year. Talk about the next 4 years, because you don't want your son to play for us and we get him a slot in college and then he plays a year and then quits. You know, that's an honest conversation they have to have. So,
yeah, that dedication. I think people just had a conversation that I thought our episode that went out, I guess by the time we air this one, it'll be like a week and a half ago, but with Andrew Petcash, who played at Boston University, and he and I kind of dove into just the Division I summer basketball program and how much guys are on campus and the workouts and just all this stuff. And we talked a little bit about how, man, I think back to when I was playing and I got done with my season as a Division I player and they handed me like a 2-page little ditto worksheet, man. Here's your workout. We'll see you back here in September.
Yeah.
And now those guys are on campus. You're basically on campus 11 months of the year. And, you know, if you're not built for that, and even guys that are built for it, in some cases, to me, it seems like, man, that is a lot of time listening to some one guy chirping in your ear all the time. It feels like, man, you could use a break. So I can totally understand your point where, look, you got to understand what college athletics is all about. And it's not all fun and games. There's great parts of it and it's a lot of fun, but I can speak from firsthand experience that there's a grind aspect to it too, that you better be willing to put the time in order to do it. And so to be able to understand, for you guys to be able to understand a kid's mentality and then also be able to help the family understand that, look, this isn't just, hey, we're just, you know, we're just rolling balls out and playing some ball on the playground. We're actually trying to get you somewhere where you can use basketball to help you get an education. But there's some work that's going to be involved in making that happen.
You know, that's funny you brought that. You know, you said how much of a grind is. We, you know, we try to get our players, you know, because it's a gap year for them. So they're not going to, you know, if they have over a 3.0, you know, we don't mandate them going to school. So some of them don't. And, you know, Coach and I are always telling them, dude, you got to get up, have a routine. You know, if we don't have a morning workout, you got to get up and I don't want you playing video games till 3 a.m. and then sleep until noon. You got to get up. You got to, you know, go do a shooting workout with yourself, get a job, go work. You know, we had one player who was, he was walking horses. I tell the story all the time. He was walking horses at the local horse track, Tempe Downs. And he had to be there at like 4:30, Pete? 4:45?
Yeah, 4:30. It started, he was 5 to 10 was his work schedule.
Yeah. So he had to work 5 to 10, but he had to be there at like 4:45. Every single morning, 7 days a week. Now, we went away to tournaments. We would go to, you know, Orlando or Jacksonville or Gainesville, whatever. He would come up with us and then leave after the game to come home so he can sleep at home to walk the horses. and then drive immediately when he's done to meet us back up at the game and then drive home. So, and you know, his mom, you know, his mom's like, you know, can he do this? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, this is a great story. You know, when he ended up going to play at a Division III school in Maine, and the coach was like, is he going to, you know, he's from Florida. Is he going to be okay, you know, coming up here? I'm like, coach, this is what he, this is what he sacrificed just to play basketball. And he's up there. He's in his second year. He's had a great 2 years. Coaches love him. He's having a, you know, he loves it up there. I mean, that's what he sacrificed to play college basketball. And so we tell our guys, like, look, you know, we want to hear what you're doing during the day. That's part of your story that we can sell. You know, I don't want to hear you just sitting around playing video games. I want you to tell me, you know, we had the kid this year who's driving an hour and a half to and from practice, you know, every single, they're on time every day. You know, that's the stories that we got to sell to coaches. That's how much that these guys want to play college basketball. So yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I could see where if you could relay a story about a kid that demonstrates their work ethic, their dedication, that's something that when you look at the transfer portal, just as an example, and you look at how that's impacting high school kids. And so if you're a college coach, you got a kid in the transfer portal, right? And that kid comes from another school where they've already had success. They've already sort of proven that they can handle the grind on whatever level it is that they were, versus an unknown was a high school kid who, yeah, maybe even that kid has a history of having a great work ethic. You still don't know until you get them into your program, until you get them out to the college. Do they adjust to the academics, the social piece of it, everything? And you can see where, yeah, it's just for kids in this little window where until things normalize in another year or two with the extra year of eligibility and all this, but that work ethic piece is something that, look, you and I both know that the value of understanding that when you bring a kid into your program, that kid's going to show up for the things that you have. They're going to show up on time. They're going to work hard. They're going to be a great teammate. All the things you guys have been talking about, if you can get that message across to the kids, and then conversely, they demonstrate that, and then you can show it to coaches, man, there's no better selling point. I mean, obviously, you have to have a certain level of talent to play at whatever level it is you're going to play at the college game, but we all know that those intangible pieces – look, if you have a team that has equal talent, you have 15 talented guys on Team X and 15 talented teams on guy, you know, on Team Y, and Team X has a bunch of guys that has great intangibles and Team Y has a bunch of knuckleheads. I mean, huge difference in what kind of success you can have.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about what makes you go. Go ahead. And then I'll jump to my next question.
No. I'm probably going to even go into a different aspect. So you're probably going to touch on it. Go ahead.
All right. So my next point was, let's talk a little bit about what makes you guys unique. And let's talk, first of all, on the basketball floor, let's talk a little bit about how you go about running your program, what you do actually out on the floor. And Jason, why don't you take what you guys like to do offensively out on the floor, and then Pete, you can jump in and talk a little bit about your defense and how you guys try to run your program so that it prepares guys for the next level.
So actually, this is exactly the tangent I was going to go into. what we try to do is another point of our program is to build basketball IQ. And so I've been fortunate, and Coach Pete as well. You know, we get to, you know, I've known David Thorpe since I was 14 years old. And so, you know, him doing what he does, you know, he sits and watches pro games every day, every morning. He gets up and he breaks down different games at the NBA, European level, G League level. And so what I – at Dunedin, I was always thinking, how can I make the game just – our guys just play organically? And I tried to do it in just me being me, just how do I do this? And I kind of did it in a small way. And I talked to David when we were at Clearwater High School, and then over to Countryside when we kind of went back there with me and Pete. And at Countryside, I was able to run the offense, and Pete ran the defense for this head coach that we worked for. And we incorporated all these different concepts of just these basic actions that the kids run organically, and each action the kids make a read based upon what the defense is doing. And we can piece these, and the kids can put these actions together, you know, and it's kind of like they're running a play, right? So it's where modern basketball is now. If you watch NBA, if you watch high level college basketball, that's kind of what they're doing. They're not coming down every time and running a play. They're running just a bunch of actions, and the offense is reacting and reading it in a way that how the defense is playing it. And then, so that's what we're trying to teach the kids. It's very, very hard at first, you know, building IQ, because most of our kids come from a high school program where they come down the court and they run a set play every time. And so, you know, we try to give them that free flow thought process where we're trying to get them to read the game, you know, get into an action, whether it's, you know, a pick and roll, a DHO, a flip action. But then they can kind of put these actions together. And our biggest key is obviously pace of the game. We want to have a good pace. We want to make sure the court is spaced out properly. But other than that, there's really no rules. If a kid makes a pass, he can cut and go screen away. He can, you know, make the catch, shoot, make the catch go right into a screen and roll. You know, it's really, you know, it's really,
these are all options that coach
yeah.
teaches during it. Like they're all options. So like he said, like with our coaching and our teaching and the repetition, our hopes is that they're going to start making these plays organically, like Francis yeah. said.
So we're doing a lot of, in practice, we do a lot of small-sided games, you know, 2-on-2, 3-on-3, you know, more so than 4-on-4 and 4-on-4 and 4-on-4 and 5-on-5, to get these guys to make the proper reads. But they're doing all these actions on their own. The only time I call a play is out of a free throw, timeout, or dead ball, you know, and my play calls are just putting actions together. So we can be in a timeout, and if I see the defense is doing something, and I'll put actions together that we haven't necessarily practiced, but the kids know, all right, these three actions we've run, but I'm drawing them up here. This is what we're going to do. And they understand it. You know, you and I know, and everyone, all the coaches listening, you know, you can't just draw a play up from either blue in a huddle and have your high school kids go out and run it. That's probably not going to happen. You know, it's something that you practiced over and over and over and over and over again. So with these different actions that we run, I can put actions in place out of a timeout that we may not have run in that combination, but because we've done it over and over and over again, they know what to do. And it's, you know, it's very cool to see, because we can really change what we're doing on the fly. And actually what's really cool to see is how our guys will adjust themselves on the fly while they're playing. So for example, if we're running a lot of screen and rolls with our five and our one, and our five can shoot and they're doing a hard hedge on a screen and roll, that our five notices, he starts ghosting it on his own and slips the screen and gets it wide open three. And it's not something that we call, it's something that they've read during the game. So, you know, it's really cool to teach, and it's great when our kids go away to college. You know, David Thorpe's son, Max Thorpe, is a walk-on, preferred walk-on at Florida State. And, you know, his first year there, their offense, he knew exactly, it was different terminology, but he knew exactly what they were doing, and he understood everything, because it's really the same thing that we were doing in high school for him. So it's, our guys have a good transition when they get to college, I think. So that's, hopefully I explained it. It's easier to do it visually.
No, you did. Absolutely. I mean, I get it. So the question that I always like to ask when we talk about, obviously this is from my own philosophy and from the way that basketball is trending, everything that you just described, Jason, is, look, we're teaching the kids how to play. We're trying to build their IQ. We're trying to build their ability to react in a dynamic environment. We're not just trying to make them robots and have them follow, because that way, when they know how to play, you can plug them into any system at the college level and they can be successful. So in the process of doing that in practice, one of the things that you talked about, small-sided games, and then what I always wonder about, and this is something that myself as a coach, even when I'm coaching my own kids and their travel basketball, and I'm trying to get this balance of, I want to teach them how to play and I want to be able to instruct, and yet at the same time, I want there to be a flow to what's happening. So how do you balance and think about letting them go through the actions and make decisions, make mistakes, go through what they see, what they don't see, and yet you're still able to teach and interject? How do you balance how much you talk versus how much you let them experiment and figure things out in the context of whatever it is, the small-sided game, the practice drill that you're putting together for them? How do you make that balance?
Less talk, more action. I can get really wordy and talk, but I've realized the best teacher is making mistakes. And so Pete and I preach and practice, mistakes are awesome. We love mistakes because that means mistakes. You got guys thinking, they're trying, they're pushing themselves. Now, if it's a mistake a guy has made 4-5 times in a row, that's a different thing. And that's where we have to stop things, adjust, talk, discuss. But we encourage mistakes, especially early on in practice, to get guys to think and read. And that's why our cognitive training that we do with Tuck Taylor is so important, because he gets our guys to think faster. And so cognitive training is huge now, I think, in basketball, because the game is so fast paced and because of the way it's gone with this read and react stuff. But yeah, mistakes are great. And we want them. I want more action, less talk. Pete can probably touch on that too. But yeah, we want to practice, and then we don't stop them with every single mistake. We kind of let them go. And then we'll stop and talk and say, okay, this is what happened here. This is what happened here. And then obviously if a mistake keeps getting made, we're building a drill immediately, and we're stopping a three-on-three practice, and we're turning it into a drill because we made the same mistake 3 or 4 times. And we build drills on the fly in practice all the time.
Yeah, I've been there. Believe me. All right, Pete, you want to jump in on the defensive side of it?
Yeah, so defensively, it's a very similar concept. We like to play fast anyways. And defensively, we're all about switching it up. And Coach Thorpe, you know, when you started at Clearwater, like, kind of gave me, you know, taught me this number system, you know, where, you know, like a 50, 55 is half court, and then 75 is something else, then 100 is something else. And basically it follows like a scheme of the last number on what we do on the full and half. And so with that terminology, we're able to switch on the fly. We go full court man, then the next time we'll zone press you, then we'll play a little bit of zone on the half court. Then, you know, we'll show full court press, and then we'll trap you on the half court. You know, all these different calls. One, you know, we still want to like win games and get the kids going. We don't ever want to have to worry about it, like scouting a team in depth. Like, they should play to our pace, right? If a team presses us, we should be fine with it because we do that in practice. And on the switch side, if they're not doing it in practice all the time and they want to play slow, but now we're dictating them, we don't want them to run their offense. So there's it's a little bit more talking on defense. Well, it's probably the same early on, because we have different principles. Where do we want the traps? How we want it? Like, all these things to think about, like help the helper, rotation, and it's all small sided again. 1-on-1 full court, 1-on-1 with situation, 2-on-2, 3-on-3, half court, one side of the floor, other side of the floor, whatever it may be. But it's really about just continuously changing the defenses, picking up the pace, and getting them to like really enjoy and fly around. And also, we want to play a lot of defenses because we don't know where they're going to go to college. So we want them to be comfortable if a team plays more of like a 1-3-1, or, oh, that team runs a press similar to what we did last year. I can pick up on this. Oh, that's similar terminology. Like, we'll guard ball screens four different ways in every game just by a call.
Pete's changed it three times in a possession.
Yeah, we do it in possessions. You know, we'll blitz it. We'll hard hedge. We'll low hedge. We'll switch it. Like, and it's just on a call. And it, yeah, keep them doing it. And so we're just on the, like, just like we're building the IQ on basketball on the offensive end, it's 100% the same thing on the defensive end.
When you put all that together and you start thinking about building up a player's ability to read situations, I think so much of what players think about is when I have the ball, right? When you go to an individual trainer, if a player has a trainer, what do they spend 99% of their time on? The balls in their hands. And yet, what I just heard you guys describe and talk about, and we all know as coaches, that there's very few players, even if you're the player that has the ball in your hands all the time, even if you're Luka Doncic, if you're LeBron, right, and you have the ball in your hands all the time, you still, relative to the amount of time you're on the floor, you really have it very little. And I think that teaching the defensive end of the floor and then conversely teaching how to play without the ball offensively, that's one of the things that I think is the most difficult to get kids to understand how important it is, and then also get them to make the right reads. Like, I often think it's easier to teach a kid how to make the right read with the ball than it is to know, hey, look, if you just would have cut this way, or you would have seen the guy turn his head and you could have gone back door, or
slip
hey,
the screen.
Right, right, exactly.
Yeah,
or what angle should I take to screen, whether I'm screening on the ball or screening off the ball. Like, there's so many little things like that that I think that sometimes get overlooked. And that's one of the things that I personally, as a coach, have always found the most difficult to teach, because as a player, I guess when I think back to myself as a player, which is a long, long time ago now, but you think back to that time and you're like, I just kind of knew, or felt like I knew where I should be. And so when you see players who don't intuitively kind of know where to be, those are always the hardest players for me to coach.
It's tough, you know, because you're thinking, man, how do you not see this? But then, right, you know, being a teacher,
yeah,
I think it helps
exactly.
me a ton.
It does. Yeah, you're right.
I've been teaching 23 years. So, you know, you got all these kids with different levels of education, and what they know and what they don't know. I'd assume they don't know anything. And, you know, Pete and I really start off and being super basic, like real basic, like, you know, kind of explaining, you know, just in a drill. This is exactly, and we're, you talked about being wordy. We're wordy at the beginning of the season and preseason, talking about drills and breaking them down and discussing them. And then once we get into that and the kids understand, then we start letting them go a little bit. But yeah, it's super important about off the ball. Like, we talk all the time about, you know, we work on our pin down action, pin downs, pin ins, slipping the screen, slipping seal. And kids just don't get it a lot. So, you know, it's huge. You know, we talk we look at the five guys on the floor, you know, the dunker spot is probably the toughest position to teach, because that's a player that never has the ball in his hands, or hardly ever. But he may be the most important, because he's making about five or six different reads that he can go through in one movement. As far as in our offense, he can go ball screen. He can set a flex screen. He can duck in for a post. He can sit back. He can screen out off a pin down. And so it's a lot of different reads for that individual. And so that is probably the toughest guy, him being off the ball so much. But it helps them a ton once they get to college and they're still playing that same position. But yeah, it's hard. And, you know, we definitely have sacrificed wins to teach these guys how to play better. And, you know, that's kind of a sacrifice that we're willing to make, because, you know, Pete and I don't have much of an ego at all. That's why it doesn't matter who stands when we're coaching. You know, we kind of make the decision, like, what's more important, this game, offense or defense? If it's defense, he's standing. If it's offense, then I'm standing. Yeah. Usually it's defense, so it's most time Pete standing. Yep. But, I mean,
right, that's true.
But, I mean, you know, so because we don't have much of an ego, we're totally fine with sacrificing a win to teach these guys how to play better, because we know it's going to help them out in the long run.
You kind of said, like, what does it look like, right? And Coach Franz has just, like, perfectly explained it. But here's some, like, examples when, like, the ball is moving on offense and it's just bang, 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 flying around, right? We get – when we buy Clearwater, you know, 6 years ago, whatever it was, we had seven kids averaging double figures.
Yeah.
In high school. We had numerous games where everyone on our team scored.
Yeah.
Because everyone bought in, and there was and we had like nine leading scorers throughout the year for games. So you couldn't really, like, if you take away, you know, quote unquote, our two, you know, better offensive players, we had a whole list of kids lined up ready to do it because they knew what they needed to do. And on the flip side, defensively, you know, we were playing the number three ranked team in the state at a shootout over Christmas, and we are just flipping presses on them nonstop. They like to play slow. They like to run sets and all that. They didn't run a single set the first half, and we're up by 22. Like, everyone was like, what is going on? And my last story is one of my favorite. Is actually a kid that did a post-grad for us. When we were at Countryside the year before, we beat them pretty good on our senior night. Like, we were up by like 35, like early in the third. We just like smoked them. But when we talked to him, when he played for us, you know, like, how was it? Because we were doing the same thing defensively. And he said, he goes, honestly, like, none of us wanted to dribble the ball past half court. We didn't know when the trap was coming. Like, that's like the big picture, like those kind of things when like everyone buys in on both sides.
And I would think the other thing that goes along with that too, right, is you guys talked about it earlier that you might have a kid that played a particular position in high school. And now they're coming into your program and you're like, okay, we got to transition you from being in the post to being out on the wing, or we got to transition you from the wing to being a point guard or whatever it might be, so that you can be prepared for the next level. And so there you're talking about, not only is the kid going to just make normal mistakes as they're stepping up a level and being in a different environment, but they're also playing a position that maybe they've spent very, very little time at. And so, as you've talked about, that progression of, hey, early on, we've got to talk a little bit more. We've got to walk you through it. And then as the season goes on, as those players start to get more comfortable in their new roles, I'm sure things that sort of even out and begin to go in the direction that you're hoping they're going to go.
It is. And the kids definitely at the beginning of our, you know, I would say season, but we really start in July. Kids are like, all right, you know, they're not bought in completely yet. But once they realize, like, we're doing everything that we do is going to benefit them individually, they buy into this whole concept. And they also realize too, on offense, at least, it's super fun when everyone touches the ball. When that ball goes from second side to third side to fourth side, you know, it's awesome because everyone's getting touches. Everyone has a chance to make a read. They understand it's not about just getting buckets. It's about, you know, it's about making the right read. I mean, I've sold guys for scholarships that they made right reads off of a hockey assist, you know, getting a bunch of hockey assists, you know, making the pass to get the pass to get a score. And so kids start buying into that, and it's fun basketball too, you know, so,
you need to put that on a sign and post it in every gym in America.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously.
Right. It's fun. Yeah. It's fun when the ball moves and everybody gets a chance to touch it. Yeah, no kidding. I mean, boy, you see so many games, players, teams that is the exact opposite of what you see. And even if you see a kid who's super talented that just scores all the time but has the ball in their hands and doesn't give the ball up, and you can just see their teammates, you can just see their shoulders sag, and it's just not a fun look. You and I both know, anybody who's ever played the game of basketball, I say this all the time, and I don't really play much anymore, but you get out on a pickup game and you play with a guy, and within like 3 minutes, you know, I never, ever want to play with this guy again. I would never, ever want to play with him because he's just wanted to dribble between his legs 14 times.
And James Harden.
Yeah, there you go. There's Jason. So yeah, I mean, you just like, it's just not, who wants to play with a guy like that? Nobody. And you know immediately as a player who those guys are.
And you know what? College coaches don't want to see that either. You know, I can't sell you to a coach when you're pounding the life out of the basketball for 20 seconds in the shot clock, and then you make a pass to get us into our offense, or then you take a shot, you know? That's tough because a lot of those guys that we get, that's what they're allowed to do in high school in many cases, especially these guards that we're getting. It's a tough, like, that's their muscle memory, like their brain and their body. That's what they know. Like, this is what's been successful for me. And we try to sell them, well, it's not been successful for you because you're not in college right now, you know? So do it our way and we'll get you into college. And so they kind of buy in. The outside noise is tough sometimes, like we talked about before, earlier. But it's a total buy-in process, man. Like,
we're not screamer yellers. We will hold you accountable. Like, we want to get the best out of you. Like, it wouldn't be right if we didn't coach the hell out of you every single time we saw you. But like, we also try to like build those relationships. Like, you know what I mean? Our kids are still, you know, 3 years ago, they're still contacting us, you know, checking in. They're still asking, hey, I'm back in town for summer. You guys doing runs? You know, come in. So eventually with the buy-in comes like the trust and kind of like, you know, we're new coaches and they only have us for a year. So not even a year, you know, 10 months, whatever it is. And it's important for us to like make them know and let them know that like we really do care. This is why it's so cliche, but like coaches said it over and over again. It's so right. No one's asking how many points you scored. I mean, we had a 6'9 freak athlete that shot 46% from three last year. And we got three separate emails from schools saying, coach, he's got all the skill in the world, but I can't take a chance on a full scholarship if I don't know the kid has a motor.
Yeah.
That's all he said. That was it. That was the breaking point. So, and on the flip side, this year we had the little guard that we talked about, and he bought in. He started defending full court, making his little shots when he's open, making the right passes, and coaches fell in love with it. And he was scoring like 6 points a game.
Those intangibles, coaches know that. Players don't always recognize and understand that it's not just about your ability to put the ball in the basket. There's so much more to the game, especially when you start looking at, and it goes back to what I said a minute ago about there's very few guys at any level of basketball that just get to have the ball in their hands all the time. So you better be able to do other things on the floor. And especially in today's game, you look at how skilled players are compared to even 10 or 15 years ago. The players are just – I watched my son. We played in a little open gym with some of his AAU teammates tonight. And the way that kids shoot the ball is just incredible. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. And the handle that they have, and I look at them, I'm like, man, I don't know if I could do some of this stuff. And I was a college player, and these guys are like sophomores in high school. And
that's right.
You know, but by the same token, like, because everybody can do that, then you better be able to do some other things besides just be able to shake dudes and hit threes. You got to be able to do some other things in order to be able to get on the floor, especially when you're talking about college basketball.
Yeah, well, you know, talking about that, how talented, you know, we're usually the least talented team because we play teams that most teams we play have guys from all around the country, and we have Tampa kids. Right. So we're usually the least talented team on the court. So we need to do things a little bit better than what they do. I mean, we played against some great players. You know, the Murray brothers at Illinois are at Iowa right now. They were playing a DME post grad. You know, we played against them. Kenyon Martin Jr. was at IMG.
Rackin Reed, who's at LSU. Williams at Duke. Michigan. Oh, yeah.
I mean,
Springer. Like,
Springer. Like, we're playing against, like, usually the teams we play against, there's at least one or two Division I level guys on the floor. You know, so, you know, we got to play the right way, and our guys got to know, because, you know, we don't have that usually. You know, we've been lucky to guys bought into our system, but they have to buy into our system, because if not, if you dribble the ball for 30, you know, 25 seconds of the shot clock, you're not getting a shot off, you know. So, you know, so it's sometimes it's a struggle. We've lost some games because, you know, our guys have kind of fallen back into old habits. That usually happens early in the season. They fall back into their high school habits, you know, dribble, dribble, catch and dribble, catch and dribble, 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 dribble. And then it's kind of stand. So that's when we have to show film and kind of break it down, like, guys, we need to do this differently. And, you know, so.
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense. It makes a ton of sense. We have blown by an hour and a half, and I just looked at the time and I'm like, oh my gosh, we are at an hour and a half. So here's what I want to do. This has been awesome. I want you guys to finish up by giving some advice out there for any players or parents who may be listening, or a lot of our audience is high school coaches, a high school coach who might be listening, who maybe wants to give some advice to players about what kind of things they should look for if they're considering a post-grad year and what they should look for in a post-grad program. So maybe let's finish there with just some questions or some advice you would have for players, parents who might be considering a post-grad year. What should they be looking for? What should they be thinking about?
Pete.
First most, like, you want to get to know the coaches, you want to get to know the program, what do they do? And I mean, you're there for one reason, is to try to get a college scholarship. So you want to know where they've placed kids, where they've actually placed kids. You want to know, what are they offering? We film every single game with a very high tech camera that shoots from above, breaks down all the film, everything for us. You know, we play teams that ask for our film after the game because they don't record games. What kind of skill work do they do? What kind of, you know, what are they doing to get the next level? What kind of exposure are they doing? Are they just posting on Twitter? Are they just calling some coaching friends they have? Or are they just like putting in the absolute legwork that we do afterwards? And it's really ask questions. And we're also, and Franz will say this, we've guided kids that we don't even coach. You know, like if anyone has questions, they can reach out to us on our Twitter account or whatever it is. But like, you want to know what is the track record of the school that you're going to, where and who do they play, and what are the basic, what is the culture? Is it to win games? Is it to help my son get to college? Is it to help him be more accountable on and off the court, like take it seriously? Like, those are all the things that I think are extremely important.
Yeah, to add to that, you know, you want to know how they're going to handle your recruitment. You know, I've had kids come to me from other programs, say, hey, you know, coach, can you help me out? The post-grad I played for, they handed me a flash drive with my games, or they gave me a Huddle account with my games. I got to make my own highlights. And I got to email coaches myself. You know, to me, you know, talking to college coaches, a lot of college coaches don't answer emails from parents or players. They just don't. It's like, well, if the coach isn't going to email me, then it's the kid's not worth it. So, you know, we handle all our recruitment for the kids. So we tell the kids, you know, if you're not going to go with us, ask them how they're going to handle, you know, your recruitment. Are you doing it yourself, or are they going to do it all for you? Another thing is, you know, how long they've been in existence and how many guys that they've landed in college. And not only that, but how much are those guys paying to go to school? You know, because if you look on our Twitter account, we don't post offers at all, and we have our kids not post offers. So if a school offers one of our guys, our guys don't post it on Twitter, on social media. The only time we post anything is if a kid commits and signs. Then we'll do a graphic and the kid will post it and we'll post it. But, you know, we want it to be a legitimate offer, a committable offer, and something to where it's not going to be financially, you know, a financial burden on them and their family just to play basketball. So they want to ask those questions like, yeah, these kids went to school, but you know, how much are they paying on average? Are they paying, you know, 10 grand a year, 5 grand a year, 4 grand a year? You know, because like I said, our goal is to get it under a state college education. If you're just a normal student, that's our ultimate goal. Because if we can't do that, then we'll tell the family and the kids like, hey, your best option is to go to a state school just to be a student. So that's another, you know, big question that I would ask. And I think that's, you know, I think those are the two biggest things that we've seen in the post-grad realm. That, you know, and Pete's right. Kids can reach out to us. A kid reached out to me, last week and said he was looking to play JUCO, in Florida. And so I just sent him a list of all the junior college coaches and their, you know, their emails, just to help the kid out. So if a kid wants to, you know, and his dad's going to email the coaches and, you know, whatever. So if a kid wants to just to help get help, you know, we're more than willing to help or to talk to them about the recruitment process. We have no problem with that either.
Fellas, this has been great stuff. It's been, first of all, an enlightening conversation. Learned a ton about post-grad basketball and then just the willingness that you guys have to be able to share your knowledge with us, with our audience. It's been great. Before we get out, give people an opportunity to tell them where they can reach out to you, share social media, website, email, whatever you guys feel comfortable or want to share so people can reach out to you, learn more about what you guys are doing.
Yeah. So our Twitter is at @CAI_postgrad. And if you go there, our individual Twitters are both in the little top section or whatever, the bio, and then our phone numbers are there. So @CAI_postgrad is where you can contact us the easiest. We're working on finishing up our website soon, which is called Third Side Basketball Academy, which is like our business where we run it out of. Franzen, any other ways?
No, our website and the Twitter account's the best way. Like, I don't think we even have to follow with our Twitter account. You can just message us. And we'll, you know, we're starting to go through a bunch of ones. I went through a bunch today. I know Pete's been going through them too. So, you know, if we don't get to you immediately, we'll definitely get to you. But yeah, that's the best way to get in touch with us.
Guys, cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule to jump on with us. Like I said, it's been a great conversation. We really appreciate it. We appreciate Coach Thorpe connecting us with the two of you. It's been a lot of fun to have a conversation, and we look forward to staying in touch as we move forward here. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.